listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, November 3rd. We're already into November. I can't believe it. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Glad to be here, Michael. As always, yes, it's November. Oof, brr.
Year's going by in a blink.
It is.
Welcome to those joining us live, as well as to those listening to the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief, and those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Now on to tonight's topic. We're going to be discussing cryptids and creatures from folklore. And, I gotta say, we've talked about cryptids before, but I'm actually more excited about the folklore creatures tonight than I am the cryptids. But I guess they kind of go hand in hand. What do you think, Dr. Hunter?
Well, I guess understanding what cryptids mean, like what cryptids are described as.
Good point.
Such as Sasquatch, Ogopogo, there's frog people, werewolves. the list is long. In that classification, I suppose we could say gnomes and little people are in the cryptid classification.
Well,
I think.
I guess I would say loosely. I mean, when I think of cryptozoology, I think of Sasquatch or the Loch Ness Monster, or other little things like that, Chupacabra, different things. When it comes to folklore is just an older form of cryptid. I guess that would make sense, but I would think of, fairies from, or fae creatures from Europe, or some different creatures from, like werewolves. I would think that we wouldn't think of that as a realistic creature that might exist. Or, skinwalkers, which would be the, indigenous American, American indigenous native tradition, the skinwalkers, they can take the form of an animal, very similar to the werewolf mythology. We were talking before the broadcast, talking about werewolf origins, and there were werewolves in ancient Greece and their mythology and stories.
And it goes back to Scandinavia, of course. Greece is, that Greek is earlier than the Scandinavia Vikings I'm talking about, but there were werewolves. There were all kinds of things that we consider to be cryptids. And the point was that they lived in the mid-world, mm-hmm. or people who could transfer between the worlds. And that actually is a theory of indigenous people about Sasquatch. They travel between the worlds. So this line of thinking is not new. You know, we can go back hundreds and thousands of years, and there's a reference to creatures that can, I guess that's the only way to say it, is, you know, travel between the dimensions and appear, I don't know, at will, I suppose, or werewolves. However, if you're cohorting with the bad guys, you could turn into one. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. It's kind of like vampires, you know. I don't think that's the cryptid family, but
right. Well, vampires, another interesting thing. It's just interesting what kind of, you know, we can tie this around to metaphysics by really talking about the human experience, and some of these are indicative of human psychology and how human beings process things. And I think some of them might be based in something more, you know, more realistic, more, you know, something deeper. For example, you know, like we talked a good deal about werewolves, the Native American indigenous equivalent being the skinwalkers. The skinwalkers, almost like werewolves, almost universally a negative thing. They're described as animalistic humanoid creatures of various different Native American tribes, largely in the American Southwest, but they are typically described as being beastly deformed and having a humanoid face with orange eyes. Mm-hmm. That might be a little exaggeration, but traditions say that they can be anyone from a powerful medicine man that succumbed to the temptation of their abilities for evil, or somebody that has committed a deep sin. They're cursed. But isn't it interesting that you have this Native American folklore that is so similar to indigenous folklore from Europe or ancient Greek folklore mythology that are separated by centuries and millennia and separated by oceans? That, so does that mean, A, that there is some root truth to this legend of a, you know, half man, half, or half human, half wolf or half animal? Or is it indicative of the similarity in cultures and how they develop their mythologies based on the human experience?
Well, I think you're asking really good questions, Michael. I think we also have to consider that there are people who have disorders and they grow all their body hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, another excellent
point. We look at ourselves now, of course, we have hair on our head and other body hair, but it's not, I mean, I think some men are Neanderthal in a lot of body hair, but
yeah.
I'm kidding. But
well,
there are some people who grow facial hair, and it's a disorder, and I can't remember what the name of it is offhand. But
if the great and talented Robin Williams were still with us, I'd make a Robin Williams fairy guy joke.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's fun. Bless him. But there are people with those disorders. Now, mm-hmm. can there be some confusion in how we interpret? You see somebody who's not necessarily ordinary, then, you know, humanity has a tendency to do that, you know, of persecuting those who are not like them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, could that have been a possibility? And that's what I think about. It's, you know, there's all kinds of disorders that can be mistaken for something to be paranormal.
Right.
Or not, you know what I'm saying. It's like they're cursed or they're possessed or they're, you know, it's from the other world. Some people think these are gifts to the community when you have somebody who's different like that, tapped into some other, mm-hmm. you know, etheric powers. But, you know, I think that perception is so much of it, but what interests me is when you actually get some facts that turn history, you know, on its butt, so to speak, like the giant skeletons that have been found throughout North America, you know, these big mounds, and they've been, some of them had been dated to 7,000 BC, you know, these giants that lived on the earth. Now, when they claim to have evidence of that, like those are pretty tall, big people and requiring very big graves. Like, what are those? So that takes me in a different kind of pathway of thinking that, you know, here we have something a little more scientific. However, you guess who's talking here, right? I believe in fairies and little people, so I don't necessarily need proof for things I believe in. I don't know, Michael. You know, it's. I think a lot of things can be explained sensibly. I think there's a lot of things that is just pure conjecture, speculation, and subjective belief systems, you know?
Well, you're gonna have a mix, and this is often the case, I suspect. There are a few rare examples of true, you know, mystery, intrigue, and wonder in terms of some of these stories and tales, and a lot of them that are, you know, human imagination. It seems to be the mix to me. But then I do tend to skew, you know, skeptical on a lot of things sometimes, but I try to be open to a lot of the possibilities.
Well, I think it is fascinating when you get cultures from all different parts of the planet that claim to see something similar, and of course they're given different names. We have Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, you know, and then there's the ones in Europe. So what's that about? You know, how is it? And again, before these are things talked about long before the internet, folks. So, was there communication? Yeah, but if there's folklore and stories of similar creatures all over the earth, to me, there's got to be something to that when they all kind of look the same. You know?
Right. I think that they're, again, you know, it's interesting, it's compelling, and I've always kind of been pulled between, is it the similarity of how human beings view the violence of the natural world and how our imaginations kind of assign, you know, is it anthropomorphic, where you humanize things? Or is it, you know, but I'm open very much to the possibility of something having existed to cause this to have, you know, become a legend or become a sighting. You know, for, I think Sasquatch is probably the most credible cryptid, but even I have my doubts because I've known people that have come forward or bragged about, you know, wearing costumes and tricking people from time to time. But then again, it had to start somewhere. They had to come from somewhere. And it wouldn't be out of the bounds for me to think of a somewhat advanced hominid species similar to humans, Homo sapiens, that would have learn to avoid us at all possible opportunities because of, you know, how we may have dealt with the other hominid species that were alive at the time, Neanderthals and Homo erectus that were still around in different parts. And, you know, I think even that history might be somewhat misleading. I don't know if Homo sapiens, if our species simply wiped out the Neanderthals and the others, or if we over long periods of time, you know, hundreds or thousands of years, grew, emigrated, and I know we intermarried with them a lot, so it was that too, but it's hard to know what would have happened. But nonetheless, it wouldn't shock me if there was a hominid species that instinctually learned to avoid humans because of the perceived threat and evolutionarily what we did to the other hominid species that were with us at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now they know there's other species of humans never known before based on some DNA and, you know, digging up stuff. But science is subjective also.
Oh, absolutely.
And actually, Mike T in the chat is saying, how do you pronounce that? Pareidolia.
Oh, I'm looking it up.
And it's when you, it's like an association of something you
right.
know. Right. And he's saying that he believes that's the cause of a lot of sightings. Well, we do. You
the
know,
human,
somebody.
Really, I've always thought of it as the human desire to make sense out of chaos.
Yeah, sure. It's like when you see Jesus in your teacup, you know? It's like, oh.
Well, except for when I see Jesus in my teacup. Then it's real, Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, okay, no, I'm with you, if you say so. But again, that's, I think Mike is absolutely right. We do have that. And apophenia, we've talked about that before, where you take, you know, try to find meaning in two unrelated events. You know,
right.
try to put that together. And it's so there's a lot of our psychology at work here. However, there's just so much we don't know. And in we go by subjective experience. As I mm-hmm. mentioned last week, for many years when I was living in Alberta, I had this giant spirit on my property, and I moved a couple of times. He came with me because it's all within the, you know, general vicinity. And my Indigenous friends would always see him when they came. Oh, you have a giant. And, hey, look, I didn't tell them. But they would intuitively say, you have a giant spirit. That's very rare. And, of course, when I moved to B.C., he didn't come because this isn't his territory, or so I'm told. Which is fair enough. But he'd show up, and friendly enough, and good energy, and that's what Indigenous people would tell me, is that's a really magical, good energy. They have a giant looking out for you. Now, can I...
We should all be so lucky.
Well, can I tell you for a fact that that happened? No, but it was, you know, just the energy, my interpretation, what other people would see in that mid-world. Or is that telepathy?
Mm-hmm.
Michael, again, there's so many possible explanations. I'm not, how do I say, I do my best to not reject any sensible explanation, all right? I can
right.
only say to you that this is my experience, that's how I interpreted that. Maybe that's a little pareidolia, you know, that's cool. Just like little people. I've often seen these little people scurrying around and go hiding. And whenever if I move to a place where there are little people, as long as I put a play area out for them, I say, look, this is your play area, then nothing else gets disturbed.
And I feel
literally. Go ahead.
I feel very strongly we need to emphasize that we're talking about fairies and fae people and, you know, magical creatures, as opposed to the little people of human origin that are wonderful and lovely people and citizens and our neighbors and friends.
Sorry, we call them little people as in the magical world.
Right, that's classical idea of a fairy or fae folk, as opposed to...
Yeah,
just the
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, it's fine. And I know everybody knows what you're talking about, but me hearing it, I'm thinking, somebody's going to come across this, and they're going to like, oh, she's putting play areas out for the little people. Why is she doing that? It's so degrading.
Yeah, no. Okay, Mike T. says, you know, also mentions that the Hobbit. Okay, think the Hobbit. All right, little people. gnomes and just like little magical people.
Well,
like leprechauns, but they're not leprechauns.
Well, I think leprechaun is one variety. There's a lot of varieties, and especially based on what folk belief origin in Europe it comes from. I know, if my memory serves, that in Iceland, they will actually plan their civic structures, like roads and things, around fairy locations and to appease the spirits and things.
Exactly. I don't know if anybody has ever had what's called a fairy ring in your yard, where there's, it looks like a, where the grass won't be green. You know, it's like a brown ring.
Mm-hmm.
We call those fairy rings. When there's this circular kind of anomaly in your grass. And that would be conceivably an energy vortex or a gathering where the little people go. See? And that's a very cool, fun thing to do. So I'd like to just throw in, if anybody does ever feel like they've got little people around, put out a little play area, put some toys. I put out teacups. I set up little things and put toys there. And I say, this is your area, this is your play, have at her. Because I like having little people around. Just don't mess with my life. That's all. Ronnie says, don't step inside a fairy ring without asking permission first. You're absolutely right, Ronnie. I should have said that, but I'm glad you reminded me.
Hey,
that's a very important thing to say.
Those fairies need to ask me for permission to put a fairy ring in my yard. They don't pay property taxes.
Who was there first?
Well, it's not about who's there. Listen. In this society, it's about who has the property rights and the deed.
Ah, I see. Yeah. You know, just as an aside, because you brought it up, Michael, Ogopogo is a name given by a name to our local in the Okanagan Lake. We have this water creature that they call the Ogopogo, not unlike the Loch Ness Monster, okay? Well, this fellow back in, I guess, the 1940s named it Ogopogo and patented the name. And when he died, he transferred that, the rights to that, to the city of Vernon in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And the city of Vernon has only just recently transferred the rights to the Okanagan Indian Band. So now they own the rights to use the name and duplicate that name. You know what I'm saying about, like, you can't use the name
copyright infringement?
Sorry?
Copyright infringement?
You're
talking
right.
about if somebody has copyright protection on a term, yeah. name, or something, and yeah, they couldn't exactly. use it for their own reasons because it was taken by, something yeah. else. Yeah.
And thank you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So just so we know, it's somebody gave it a name. It was didn't always have that name. It wasn't always, somebody just made it up.
And what was that name again?
Ogopogo?
Ogopogo, thank you, thank you. And I had mentioned before the broadcast, Baba Yaga is one of my, fun favorite Eastern Europe or Slavic. Oh. And Ogopogo, did I say that right?
Pogo. Ah. Ogo, P-O-G-O.
Gotcha. Just made me think of Baba Yaga, and then after that I couldn't get Baba Yaga out of my head.
There you go, the obvious. No, and that's, it is interesting about, we don't know, it's kind of like trying to use the word Disney now. Somebody actually has the name Disney, you can't name your company that, because there's Disney World.
Right, right. So, if you're, named James Disney, and you want to open up Disney Industries, you're going to have a problem. There's going to be a team of lawyers at your door, they're going to pay you to change your name, and they're going to pay you millions to do it.
Well, it is a fascinating thing. It's just to open up the whole world. In my reality, when certain stories come up, whether it's Harry Potter, like I'm just jumping for joy because somebody understands my world. I much prefer my world, Michael. I really do.
Well, it's I don't blame you. I mean, who would pick this world over that?
Well, okay, I have to talk about this, Michael. I really do. When we talk about perceptions of reality, the QAnon protesters, waiting in Dallas, Texas for the arrival of JFK and JFK Jr. just tops them all to me. It just tops them all. That is a different reality. This is not what we're talking about, cryptids. However, there might be some in QAnon. We're not sure. And I know I'd probably get hand slapped for saying that. But perceptions of reality are relative.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, joke's going to be on you when JFK Jr. comes back and turns out he was a vampire this entire time. He's been working the underground.
Bite me.
But, sometimes it's maddeningly frustrating. And we all just want to try to experience some kind of truth, right? And we all want to let our wonder go to. We want to be able to believe in something. And we want to be able to explore something. And we feel something. And I think
a
lot of us will.
That's the appeal of religion.
Exactly.
Really.
A lot of us will. Yeah. Suspend disbelief in order to do that. They'll buy into something for the secondary gains. You see it in religion a lot. You get the community. You get the certainty that you know what's going to happen. You know everything. You know where we came from, where we're going to go, the rules that you have to follow if you want to go to the good place. But make sure that your religion is the right one, because if it's not, you're kind of SOL.
But, I'm with you on that. Jamil just said in the chat, don't forget those lizard people. Well, now that's a whole other category, Jamil.
Now, that one's real. They do live in the center of the planet, and Tom Hanks is one. How can somebody be that likable? I say humbug.
There are some classifications of, like, the frog people and stuff. I suppose they could be lizard people that are cryptids in that category. However, the lizard people that people commonly talk about are a form of extraterrestrials. And
the is it Anunnaki?
I think you're right. No, I don't think the Anunnaki are not lizard people. Maybe I'll just go have to Google that. Google knows everything.
Well, that's funny. Let's see.
I'm going to look this up. Of course, a lot of people have
ancient
ideas of
Sumerian gods. And it could also be ancient aliens. Well,
okay.
I'll let you look at that. But I'd actually never heard of frog people until tonight when you brought them up.
Oh, they're in the list of cryptids. Go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia knows everything. The humanoid frog.
I did start looking up stuff about giant skeletons after you'd mentioned that last, too.
Well, apparently they've been seen in Loveland, Ohio. Michael,
well,
I'm not making this up. They're making this up, all right? I don't know.
Yeah,
because anything can be put into...
The Loveland frog. I actually do have the Wikipedia list of cryptids. Shout out to Wikipedia. You guys do good work most of the time. But, yeah, it's interesting. You can go through this list, and it's just... let's go ahead and, for our listening fans...
Yeah, go ahead.
We have things like the... I'm not even going to try that one. There's Champ, a lake monster in Lake Champlain. That's, you know, kind of along the Loch Ness line. The Loveland frog, which is a humanoid frog in Ohio. Ooh, this one's fun. The Mamlaboo, which is a lake monster in South Africa. We have some themes going here.
Yep.
Let's switch to some terrestrial land-based. Of course, we have Bigfoot. We have the Bukit Timah monkey man. Forest-dwelling hominid, or primate from Singapore. The chupacabra is always fun. The Dover demon from Massachusetts. Dover, Massachusetts has its own Dover demon cryptid. Let's see. The Michigan dogman. The humanoid dog, which is, I'm pretty sure, probably a guy running around in a Chewbacca costume, but I haven't clicked on the link yet.
Hey, don't forget the skunk ape in Florida. That's in your neck of the woods.
That's true.
Michael.
Well, it's just Sasquatch. Same like Yeti... Skunk ape, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, they're all same thing, only different. let's see. Ooh, this is the Mongolian death worm.
What?
I've seen Dune. I know what that is.
Oh, that's funny.
Of course, then you have the Jersey Devil. Mothman is a very popular one. Mm-hmm. The Thunderbird, which is something other than a classic car. But
now, the Thunderbird... Mm-hmm. We'd stop you right there because for indigenous people of North America, the Thunderbird is very powerful and it lives in the mid-world.
Mm-hmm.
It is an ancient bird. There's so much artwork I'm sure you're all familiar with depicting the Thunderbird.
Yeah, but there's a lot.
The eagle, there's in the pecking order in the sky world is the Thunderbird, the eagle, and then the hawk. So that's kind of in that species, much like the raven, the crow, and the magpie being related in the sky world. Thunderbird trumps all. I don't like using that word, but I guess I had to. So it's a very powerful energy, and there isn't any indigenous people I know who do not absolutely believe in the Thunderbird.
Well, it's kind of a primal force, isn't it? One of the primal forces of the world. And is it not also, could it not also just be a metaphor for the primal force that we feel? You know, it's just a name to give it. It is how the human mind imagines this primal force that is somewhat unseen.
I don't know. See, again, in my weird psychic moments, Michael, I was at a lodge ceremony up in the Rocky Mountains many years ago, and I was standing with this medicine man. We're looking out over the sky and talking, and I just suddenly saw this huge, big bird that almost covered the sky. And I said, "Did you see that?" And he said, "The bird." And I said, "The bird. It's this big black bird." And he said, "There's only three of them circling the planet right now." Wow. I didn't know that. He said, the grandfathers tell me there's three of those. Now, I saw it in my mind's eye, you know, kind of that projects like a camera to the sky. It's like, however that happens. Now, again, is there some telekinesis here? I don't know. But it's no different than the time when I, several times when I saw this weird bird in my mind's eye, you know, sitting in a tree in northern Alberta. And I would call up a few of my indigenous friends and say, I saw this bird. It looks like a hawk, but it's a crow. It's not an owl, eagle. It's just weird mixed up bird. Yeah, we've been seeing a lot of strange things lately. And then a couple of years ago, I find it on the internet, exactly what I saw. And it's a potu bird, P-O-T-O-O. It's called a ghost bird, otherwise. And it's from South America. I don't know, Michael. I'm telling you, I saw it in my mind's eye. Next thing I know. So there's things traveling through the air and there's psychic impressions. Did I get that from, you know, some universal Akashic record that kind of lost a page and dropped down in my mind? I don't know. But it's seeing strange things. So the Thunderbird is what they believe. From our point of view, it's extinct, but it is something that once lived here, became extinct, that still travels around the Earth. They still exist, but in another dimension.
Exactly. You know, or, you know, and the spirit world, you know, is, if it exists, I mean, if we were to take it literally, it really is just an alternate dimension or a dimension that lays on top of our existing physical dimension. When the veil is thin around, you know, Hallows Eve, then maybe things can become more apparent. But that, you know, to me, it's all speculation. I don't know. But it's interesting, and it explores...
It's a fabulous discussion.
It is, and it's one of those things that kind of gets at these mysteries, these commonalities. It's like, you know, why do you see pyramids in so many different places around the world? It, you know, I do think it's a very... common it's a very common structure. It's a common shape. It has architectural meaning to humans on a primeval level, I think. So I think that could be an explanation, or maybe it could be something more. The pyramids in Central America were built, of course, much later than the ones in Giza. But, you know, it's just one of those fascinating topics. It's these stories that kind of bind us all, and the seeing the similarities between indigenous folklore from all over the world, meaning early folklore from Europe or the Americas or Asia or Africa, it's interesting, the commonalities that you see. It's fascinating.
Well, and that's why I said, you know, there's more to things than we know.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm good with that. I just like that curiosity and that possibility. I love the magic of it. It's way more sane than reading the news. That's what I was thinking.
Well, yeah, it gets crazier and crazier, but
yeah,
it can be ridiculous, but well, I think
we're at that time, Michael.
We are. It's that time of the night, and
yeah.
You know, it has been a fun discussion, and it's always engaging, and I always appreciate it, but. Looking forward to pulling some cards. We have the Inner Oracle deck, and we're going to pull a card from there and then pair it with a tarot card that you'll pull, Dr. Hunter. Kind of see.
That's what we do.
See what kind of story it tells. All right. And we have Ronnie up first.
Hey, Ronnie. Nice to see you here tonight.
All right. Ronnie, I have a wild card. Number two, and then some. When you have reached your limits and believe that you have done all that you can do, reach deep within to stretch your true potential. Do a little more than is needed and go beyond what is required to make a positive difference. You can do it, and by doing so, you are leaving the woodpile a little higher than you found it.
Well, that's a wild card in the Inner Oracle card deck, Ronnie, and I picked a wild card. Well, think of it as the major arcana, strength. So when you're feeling a little tired and depleted, you got way more in you than you know. You know, sometimes it just means taking a breath and going that extra distance. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to give to others more than you have. This could simply reference challenging yourself to do more even for you, like going beyond your own limits, your own, what you thought were your limitations, but you didn't know you could do more. It's kind of like when I was in martial arts training, and the first time I broke a board, I went, oh, I did that. I was so terrified to do that, but then I did that. Well, before you know it, you know, climbing up the levels, going beyond what I believed I could do. And I think that's just a message to you here. That's the affirmation that I get. You're capable of way more than you know, and you're just kind of on the brink of fully realizing that. So power to you.
That's a great message. All right. Let's see. I believe we have Dr. Edward next.
That's what I have, Dr. Edward.
All right. Another wild card. Wild card number 9, blank. Let's see. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be. It is all that you desire it to be. Remember, the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices and in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
The Two of Hearts, Edward. You know, I love the blank card, and because it is filled with all kinds of possibilities, and of course life is subjective in that. And that's relevant too, because of what we perceive. So anything is possible. And in this case, it's saying the Two of Hearts is about relationships. Now, it doesn't have to be an intimate relationship, by the way. It could be a friendship, a family member, somebody. Maybe it's somebody, as I'm sensing here, you could have been estranged from, or let's say had a disconnect with, but anything is possible. So I see you reaching out and making new connections is what I want to say. And maybe it's people you haven't seen for a while, but I do sense a familiarity as opposed to new people, reconnecting with people you haven't been around in for a bit. So I don't know, I feel like there's these renewed, I'll use that word, renewed connections for you. And that's a really powerful thing. And there's something, I want to say this to you, I don't know why, is you will get an affirmation in some way from someone. Like, I feel like you get validated or you get the last word. And that makes you feel better too. Only because you were right in the first place. Anyway, that
does feel good to be right.
I hope it makes sense.
All right. Jamil, we have you up next. Let's see. Number 6, boundaries. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
You know, what's so interesting, Jamil, is picking the magician in support of that. I think sometimes when we don't have boundaries, we flounder a bit. But when we do set up parameters and we do set up some boundaries, then your focus is there and magic begins to happen. Now, the magician is often about alchemy, where you take, let's say just a piece of metal, turn it into gold. It's that energy shifting into something much more positive. So I think that there's establishing some parameter for you actually gives you more power and management abilities to move forward. So draw boundaries, and you have to be nice about it. Maybe it's even boundaries within yourself to stay focused. So I think, again, you're right on the precipice of learning this and studying yourself making those observations, but forward movement for sure. I know I'm going on and on tonight, aren't I? There's these messages coming through.
Well, when the intuition comes, you got to go with it.
Yeah, go with it.
All right. Excuse me. Dr. Jeff, I have you up next.
All right.
And Dr. Jeff, I have number 16, the continuity of life.
Hmm.
Human consciousness transcends the physical body, allowing a new chapter of life to continue. Stability and peace is assured with continuity and the flow of day-to-day life. There is reason to hope for a favorable outcome in the face of adversity or a difficult situation. You are a living example of the continuity of life. Cherished values will continue to live and grow. Sometimes we must allow a current chapter to close so that a new chapter may begin.
Oh, Jeff, I got the Nine of Spades with that. Now, well, what is that about? And so I drew another card to get a clarity, and it's the Four of Diamonds. So let me back up. Continuity of life, followed up by the Nine of Swords, to me is grief. That's sadness, grieving, and that can be relevant in any number of ways. Sometimes it's a change in our life. And knowing you a little bit, Jeff, is that, you know, your boys are now grown, they're moving on in their lives. There is a grief period where life is all changing. And, you know, the continuity of life as you carry on. The great thing here is that Four of Pentacles is that stability, that being a little bit miserly of what you do have and looking at your foundation. And you have so many other things filling that void or filling that space, let's say. So there's a change in your life, and we all grieve what was through a shift, and we all have to take those moments. So I know I'm talking to air at the moment, Jeff, and you and I have not spoken in a long time, so I'm winging it, and so I shouldn't assume that it's only about your family and the change of the family, but other things. So continuity of life here. Take your moment to, you know, feel that shift and know that there's so many stabilizing forces getting ready to propel you. Continuity of life.
All right.
Yeah, I want to say thanks to Jamil, especially. He said he's reading The Secret Teachings of All Ages, and the Boundaries of Magician actually made sense to him.
Yeah.
It's a lot of reading in The Secret Teachings of All Ages. I have that book. I cherish that book. I have a big one. If anybody hasn't gone into that for some reason, please look it up. It's a fabulous book.
That sounds very interesting. I haven't looked into that yet. I'll have to add it to my list.
It's a good one.
All right. And
we have Audra next,
and
I think, Michael.
We do. And Audra, I just want to throw out there, she had mentioned that her cat went missing on Halloween. And hoping that you find them again, hoping that was not a bad omen, the crow that landed, and wishing you the very best. I know how tough that can be. So, Audra.
Well, if it was an owl, I would see crows travel between the worlds. That's the symbolism of the crow. But if it was an owl, I'd say, ooh, not a good sign. Owl is big change. But the crow sometimes just delivers messages, and it doesn't have to be from the other side. So I think you have there's a good possibility here, Audra, that your cat will come home. That's what I want to say to you.
Very hopeful. Very hopeful. All right. Tonight, Audra, I have number 28 for you. Do no harm, do right. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to yourself and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good for all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
Well, do no harm, do right, supported with a decision. That's what the Two of Swords is, in my view. Audrey, you might be faced with an interesting situation that requires you to go on your radar. It's instinct, intuition combined. I don't see this as a bad card at all. A lot of people say, ooh, negative. No, I don't see it that way. I see it as there are these energies at work, could be opposing forces, and you need to navigate through that. And you don't necessarily have any substantial information to make decisions and how you're going to do that. However, follow your intuition, and you can't go wrong. Okay, so that do no harm, do right really is that staying true to you, because we know who you are, and you don't need to be reminded to, you know, don't do any harm. But sometimes in situations, you know, well, for me, I just like to punch somebody sometimes. It's like, no, take a breath. You
but
know,
is it really doing harm if it makes you feel so good? Is it? Okay. Of course it is. Of course it is. Don't do it.
We all have those thoughts, Michael. We all have them. Don't act on them. Don't project them. That's all. Just own them. So I think that what this is use that intuition. Navigate situations in a good way that you know. So, and that hopefully benefit all. I would like to inject before we get to Kevin. Kevin apparently needs an answer to a question here. So we'll get to that in a second. I want to heart out to Jeff. When we were talking about the continuity of life and grieving, he said the most current thing right now is preparing for his older dog to take the journey to the other side. And it's probably just a matter of days. Uh-huh. And that's a huge shift for you, Jeff. And of course, when I mentioned about you do have this other stabilizing force, we know you have that, your other dog, your seeing eye dog. It doesn't make the grieving process any less.
Yeah.
Your dog, this guy you've had for so many years now, he's had a good life. You've given him a good life just as much as he gave you a good life. And it's that segue now into the continuity of life. But I truly, and Michael does too,
mm-hmm.
We honestly know what that is and what that feeling is. So we are sending you and all of your family big white lights.
Very much so. Very much so. A few things in life more difficult, but you have us with you.
Absolutely. So, and everybody else, join in, please. Sending Jeff and his family white lights and his best friend, you know, to fly high and the other side, and thanking him very much for being such a great friend and companion here. Awesome.
Absolutely.
So now Kevin. Kevin says, quote, end quote, I need a pivotal card. Would appreciate an answer.
All right. Well.
Okay. Well, let's see what happens, Michael. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well, I hope this is going to connect, and hopefully the way that you want it to. I pulled number 26, Energy Signature. This card is a call to be aware of energy signatures, which is the vibe a person puts out or the energy of a situation. Energy signatures are changed by increased awareness resulting from gaining more knowledge and wisdom of self. Review the present energy signature that you may be sending, or that of a situation, individual, or relationship. Keep what is healthy, remove what is unhealthy. Remember, you cannot change others. You can only change yourself and your own energy signature.
It's always so hard, isn't it, Michael, when there's a demand answer?
Well, we roll the dice and we see what probability has to say.
Well, from energy signature, Kevin, I pulled the sun. So, we're winging it here, going way out on the limb and saying, whatever it is that you're projecting for and whatever it is that you want, you know, be sensible, but it's really going to grow where you water it. That's what I want to say to you. The sun is about new life and new energy and growing, and it's extraordinary. It's a wonderful symbol to pull here. So what is in keeping with your energy signature? So if you're making a decision of some kind, is it what you want? Because sometimes the opportunity is to say no. But is this one of those opportunities? What is it that you're looking at that it resonates with you? How are you moving forward? And what is it you want to grow? So only water your own energy signature. You know, I look back in my life and I zigged when I should have zagged when I should have zigged. And very often, and Michael and everyone, I look back and I say, it's because I went off of my own energy signature. Mm. You know, doing something because of somebody else or somebody else's right. words or somebody else's, you know, and keeping the peace and making everybody happy. And in the end, I went off of my energy signature and I had to find my way back to it. So as long as you stay on yours, Kevin, it's going to grow. Your life will continue to grow. Your work will continue to grow. That's what I want to say. We're good?
That's a very important message. You have to stay true to yourself. You have to be yourself. You know?
Well, let's just hope it answers this question.
All right. Well, just taking another look through, I think that is everybody for the evening. And if so, that brings us to a close.
Again. What are we talking about next week? We had a potential subject. What were we talking about, Michael?
I don't know.
We'll think of something.
Yeah, I think we had a couple. But I know last week we delved into the part two of this. And beyond that, I apologize. You know, when you get to be my age. That's all. That's all. But no, we're going to think of something interesting. And, you know, we'll send it out to you by email. We welcome those that can join us live. We appreciate you. We appreciate the dynamic nature of the conversation. And, you know, hopefully when you join us live, you get something important out of it in terms of that feeling of, you know, community. I look forward to seeing people every weekend, you know, maybe get a card pulled. So we hope you can join us next week. And
Dr. Kevin, he said, thank you so much. Perfect. Take care, Dr. Jeff. So he was also talking to, but he said, I guess we answered the question.
All right. Glad connected.
I had to throw that in.
All right. How about this? Just came to me. What about prophecy?
Good idea.
All right.
What's a prophecy? I like that. My old teacher Magda would say, all of our dreams are about hopes, fears, and prophecies. I think there's much more than that, but that's what she used to base it on, and we could go there too. Prophecies. What are prophecies?
All right. So, with that, any last thoughts, Dr. Hunter, before we wrap up?
I just want to say thanks to everybody. We're into November. Take care out there. Stay in your own energy field. You know, buffer out and navigate as well as you can. We got this.
Good advice. I couldn't say it any better myself. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.